Get going here, and thank
you. Bowl season is here, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. Are you sick and tired of the runaround when you ask for a payout? Sign up at MyBookie.ag today and get paid fast when you win. MyBookie is your hookup for all your betting needs, and you can even deposit using Bitcoin. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on, and if you want to make money during this bowl season, you have to go to mybookie.ag. They're the only site I would recommend, and I trust them, but you don't have to take my word for it because you can go check them out yourself easily today. They have odds on every matchup as well as in-game live betting on all the season's NFL and bowl games, and if you join MyBookie right now, they'll match your deposit with up to a 50% bonus. All you have to do is use the promo code LOCAVS, that is L-O-C-A-V-S, to activate that offer and go to mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid, and if you're going to bet, the only place to do it is at mybookie.com using that promo code LOCAVS.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com and the Step Back, here today with Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report to talk about a kind of underwhelming Cavs-Celtics game. Boston wins 102-88 in Boston with no Isaiah Thomas playing. Greg, how you doing? And what was your just kind of initial reaction to how this game played out?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back on. Unfortunately, I wish we had a better game to recap, especially when you're playing that marquee team like Boston. Definitely a disappointing effort to be sure. But are we really surprised that they lost by 14 when, you know, you consider that, yeah, they didn't have Isaiah Thomas. They're pretty recently fresh off a road trip. They're coming off the back-to-back last night where they had to play at home against Portland, they fly to Boston. Like, it's just all these like factors. Yeah, they're excuses, but they're also like, when you take that into account and the fact that it's early January, a 14-point loss to the Celtics wasn't really that surprising.
Yeah, the Celtics came in with 3 days off ahead of this game. I think that certainly matters. I think the Cavs, having come off that West Coast road trip, having played last night and then having flown to Boston, I think, you know, we can look at the effort and say it could have been better, but I do think that wears on you a little bit. And I think, you know, this is one of those games where you have a feeling that it could come out this way. And you certainly, in terms of wanting to watch something interesting, you hope that's not the case, but I think that's what we got there. Before we get into the weeds of this game, Greg, you know, like everybody else, have watched Isaiah Thomas make a season debut. Listeners can go back and listen to the deep dive I did yesterday with Eric Garcia Gunderson on IT's debut. But what did you make of IT's debut with the Cavs and how he looked in scoring 17 points in his 19 minutes?
Yeah, I thought he looked really good. I thought one of the most important things was, I think maybe it was the second time he touched the ball. He got tripped up. He went to the floor. It was a pretty hard fall. And for a guy that's been rehabbing that hip for 7 months and hasn't played, mentally, he probably needed just some contact like that and be able to bounce up and be okay and be like, all right, you know what? My hip's good. Like, let's go. Let's play ball now. And, you know, he wasn't one dimensional offensively either. You saw him in the pick and roll. You saw him driving. You saw him spot up 3-point shooting. You know, all the things we're going to see, whether he's on the court with LeBron or trying to lead a unit by himself. I felt like we got a little taste of everything. You know, he's only out there for 19 minutes. Coming in, it was reported he was only going to play 20 to 22, so he's right around there. Cavaliers obviously had a big lead, especially in the second half. So, I mean, overall, what complaints do you have? The guy had 3 assists. He had 17 points. The shot was there. He's shooting 50%. Physically, he took his hits, and he bounced right back up. I mean, I don't think you could have asked for much better of a opening performance for a guy that hadn't played since May.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think you could have asked for anything more. And I think to look at this Celtics game, I think that this was a night where you could really use a guy like Isaiah. LeBron was awesome in this game, as he typically is. You know, he wasn't necessarily at his peak, and I think you could see him take his foot off the gas a little bit. But 19 points for him to lead the team with Kyle Korver next up at 15.
and no one else really played that well offensively. I thought Tristan Thompson had a decent game and had a 10-10 double-double. But, you know, Kevin Love, 1 of 11 in this game, 0-4 from 3, and had that tweaked ankle, which, you know, he was ruled out for the rest of the game. Doesn't seem like it's too serious, but he did look a little bit gimpy. Jay Crowder had a 2 of 12 performance, 0-6 from 3. You had Jose Calderon, 2-4. J.R. Smith actually played well, 4-6, 2-3 from 3, but then Channing Frye in garbage time, 0-3. Jeff Green, 3 of 11 in his 27 minutes. And Dwayne Wade, I think most notably, 2 of 10. So I think you get Isaiah in this group kind of eating into Calderon's minutes, eating into some of the other wing minutes you have. I think Jeff Green and Crowder, even though they're different positions, I think just IT is going to eat into some of that and probably a little bit of JR too at this point, because I think I'd have him behind both Wade and Korver right now just based on how he's played this season. I think this game is just an example of like why this team needs IT and why it can never hurt really to have another really, really good creator and elite scorer on your roster when even when you have LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and Kevin Love and all these guys. The guys like that matter just all the time.
Yeah, I mean, you look at a team like Boston, they're just so good defensively that, you know, even we saw early in the game, LeBron had it going. I mean, he was pushing the ball in transition. He was getting guys one-on-one in the paint, which, you know, we know if he's going downhill towards the basket, it doesn't really matter who's guarding him. He's going to at least draw a foul or get a layup or get something. I think he missed maybe one of his first 8 shots. He was really, really good, and he was taking really good shots. The problem was there was nobody to help him. Kevin Love right now is your number 2 guy, giving you 20 points a night. Like you said, he finished 1 of 11. He didn't even make a shot in the first half. I think he started off the game 0 of 7 or 0 of 8, didn't make a shot till the start of the second half. They just needed him. They need somebody to get going. Jay Crowder, 0 of 6 from 3. He had a lot of good open looks. LeBron had a lot of good passes to him. Couldn't hit any of those. And J.R. Smith, for his final shooting line, 4 of 6, you know, he disappeared for big stretches of that game too. One of those 3-pointers was right at the buzzer right before halftime. That was kind of a, you know, a typical J.R. Smith shot from 30, 35 feet away. I mean, you just didn't get that second guy to step up like you needed. And I feel like that's kind of like what you were just saying. That's where Isaiah Thomas is going to help you, because you know you're going to have a guy right there that's going to give you 20 to 25 points a night next to LeBron James. Kevin Love's good for that on most nights, but he's going to have stinker nights like tonight where he just can't hit a shot. He looked like he was bothered somewhat by Al Horford in the paint. Al Horford's a very good defender. Kevin Love just didn't look comfortable near him there. He was missing wide open threes, took a couple contested threes as well. Just getting Isaiah back and bringing that offensive threat and, you know, getting Jose Calderon out of there, as fine as Jose Calderon has been, you know, you're not counting on him to give you any offense. Any offense he gives you points-wise is a bonus. So if you replace Calderon with Isaiah Thomas, then you can live with Jay Crowder missing his 3-pointers. You can live with, you know, Kevin Love having an 0 of 8 first half. If you have a second dynamic score in their next LeBron, right now you don't have it, and that kind of demonstrates the importance of that, especially come playoff time when, you know, you're almost as surely going to play Boston in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's with what's gone on with this point guard position. They said on the broadcast that the Cavs have the second worst behind the Knicks points from their starting point guards per game, and the Knicks have Frankie Smokes, Frank Nicotina, and Jarrett Jack. So that's not exactly like a good indictment when the Cavs have had Derrick Rose and stuff. And looking at PR, Jose Calderon, in terms of qualified point guards in PR this season, is 63rd in PR. The only players, the players that are worse than him: De'Aaron Fox, Malcolm Delaney, Marcus Smart, Tyler Ulis, Jameer Nelson, Deli, Jared Bayless, Frankie Smokes, MCW, Mark Carter-Williams, and Juwan Evans, who's a two-way player for the Clippers. He's behind Chalmers, Shelvin Mack, Larkin, Isaiah Taylor. But like, he's not exactly in great comparison there. So Calderon's been, you know, by most kind of metrics there, he's been passable but not starting quality. If you look at where the guy, what their guys are going to get back, I'd see he's going to be up there with the Lillards, the Westbrooks, the Kemba Walkers, and in that top end of the range, kind of right in the mix with Kyrie and behind Curry and Harden, who've just been in their own world. And I think, you know, Isaiah, you have to bring him back slowly. I think it's totally good that he didn't play in this game, but I think you just see like the production you get from that position when it's been so essential and it matters so much. I think, especially on a team that has that, you're playing a team with Kyrie, who's very good and, you know, didn't even have that great of a game. He had 11 points and six assists and nine boards, and it didn't really feel like this was a Kyrie game, but you still can see where like you miss that production opposite a guy like Kyrie.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, like you said, with Kyrie, he only had 11 points. Well, he didn't have to score because they had four guys in their starting unit that had 11 points or more, and it was really balanced. The Cavs had three guys in their starting lineup that had 6 points or less. That's not good. That's not good at all, especially when, you know, you're coming off a really good Jay Crowder game the night before, where he had 17 points, one off his season high. Obviously, that was influenced by Isaiah Thomas's presence on the court. I mean, you're not going to get 2 points from Kevin Love every night. Obviously, that was an outlier there. But it kind of speaks to the lack of a scoring punch you have in the starting lineup when you have to start a Jose Calderon. You're depending on J.R. Smith's shots to fall, and Jay Crowder, you can't rely on him for consistent offense at this point. But normally, if you have a bad game like that, this is a bench that's been able to bail you out, and the bench was not much better. Dwayne Wade, 2 of 10. It took a lot of bad shots, I thought, a lot of contested shots. There was one fadeaway baseline jumper that he shot over Kyrie that it's just not a good look, especially when you know this is a very good defense, and that's the type of shots that they just bait you into taking. And I didn't feel like the ball movement was there. Jeff Green, a guy that kind of thrives on ball movement as well, 3 of 11, 0 of 2 from three. So those are two of your main bench contributors. If you don't have Kyle Korver in there hitting 5 of 8 three-pointers, I mean, for a while he hit three three-pointers, I believe it was in the second quarter, that even kept this close to a game. So if you take Korver out of there, then it's a really bad night. So you look at a bench that's been able to carry you a lot of times when the starting lineup steps up or fails to step up. And, you know, with Green and Wade hitting 5 of 21 shots, yeah, that wasn't there tonight. And, you know, give credit to the Celtics as well. They're a very good defensive team.
As Dwayne Wade in this game, 0 assists as well, and he's not exactly been the assist king this year. He's only averaging 3.9 a game coming into Wednesday's game, but just not having him get any assists and him not really play at the distributor role, it kind of, I think, impacted as well. And that's another way Isaiah, I think, is gonna help. With Kevin Love, he's the one that stands out to me. I think we can look at Crowder and say he probably shouldn't be taking 12 shots, and some of them did come late in the game when the game fell over, but that's a lot of shots for him. And I think 11 shots is a lot for Jeff Green, even if he does get to the line 7 times and has done a very good job this season of getting to the line. But when you look to Kevin Love's night, only 21 minutes because of that ankle injury, looked gimpy coming out of the locker room in the second half a little bit, to the point where I wasn't sure if it was necessarily the smart play for him to go. Was there anything about his night that particularly stood out to you in terms of why or how he was missing his shots?
He looked really uncomfortable, especially early on when he would get position into the paint. I know Horford's a good defender, but he's not a guy that, I don't want to say Kevin looked scared, but he just didn't look right in the paint. He wasn't his normal aggressive self when he was getting those looks. It's not like, you know, he had an Anthony Davis on him or a Kristaps Porzingis, this 7-foot guy that's, you know, blocks 2-3 shots a game. It's Al Horford. Horford's a fine defender, but Love's gone up against him so many times, and he just didn't look comfortable. You know, maybe part of that is, okay, we're coming off a back-to-back, we had to travel, we're off the road trip, whatever. You know, maybe he's got some sort of nagging injury, little thing that's bothering him we don't know about. I don't know. But he just never looked comfortable with his initial shots. And he's a guy that, you know, he says time and time and again, he likes to start from the inside and work his way out. And he took a lot of three-pointers early on too. Kevin Love, when he's at his best, is very deceptive with the ball as well. A lot of times, you know, he'll get the ball, it'll be a kick out, he'll have a spot up three, he'll do a pump fake, a defender will be flying by. I saw that maybe one time tonight. Other than that, it was just kind of like, I made up my mind, I'm going to shoot this. And a lot of the times there was a defender right there with a hand on his face, because that's what Boston does. They're a very good closeout team. They have a lot of guys like a Horford, like a Jason Tatum, guys that are athletic, that can cover ground. And I just didn't like the looks that he was getting. And I thought he could have been more aggressive with his shot attempts on the inside. And that really killed him early when he was 0 of 8 at halftime or something close to that, just not having any production from, you know, your second leading scorer, your 20 point per game scorer, that really hurt him. If he would have even hit half of his shots, 40% of his shots, 30% of his shots, I felt like that would have really made a big difference in this game. And you wouldn't have had to rely on Jay Crowder and Jeff Green and some of these guys that had really bad shooting nights. You wouldn't have had to rely on them so much. So yeah, Kevin was definitely a major factor in their loss tonight.
This is in my memory, without having gone back and used Basketball Reference to look at the box scores, this felt like the worst game Kevin Love's ever played against Al Horford.
You would think so, because normally we match up very well against Al Horford, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I'm certainly going to – that's what I'm saying is probably certainly a little bit out there, and it's a little bit – has some hyperbole to it, but I think like this just wasn't what I would expect from Kevin Love against Al Horford in a seven game playoff series. And you know, I think there are some things Boston can do that I think will be interesting to see. They're definitely, I think, going to run a lot of pick and rolls at Kevin Love come the playoffs. I think that's something you'll see. I think you'll see them attack Isaiah and Kevin Love, not unlike that teams would attack Kyrie and Kevin Love in years past, just because of some of the similar weaknesses are there. And Isaiah is, even as we saw the Cavs attack last year, Isaiah is a smaller guy, and defensively that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. I'll ask you this, and then we can move on to the bigger picture of what this game actually means or doesn't mean, rather. But is there anything else about this game that you feel like deserves just a quick mention in or stood out to you, whether that was a good or a bad or a neutral thing?
I would have liked to see more ball movement personally. I feel like we've seen this before, whether it's against Boston or against Golden State, when it's when it's just tougher to get a shot off. I feel like some of our guys, be it LeBron, be it Dwayne Wade, be it guys who have, you know, kind of taken an offensive burden upon themselves in their career, they just look to, they don't take the best shots. It's kind of like you got that hero ball that kind of sinks back in. I thought Dwayne Wade took some bad shots. LeBron took some excellent shots earlier in the game, and then he kind of faded back to more outside shots. His three-point shooting has been pretty bad the last couple of weeks after such a good start. I would have liked more ball movement to lead to more open shots. When you finish with only 16 assists and anyone not named LeBron couldn't even get more than two, especially you mentioned Dwayne Wade had zero. That's your secondary playmaker, not counting Jose Calderon. When Wade gives you zero assists and LeBron's at six and nobody else gives you more than two, that kind of speaks volumes to the ball movement tonight. I would have liked to see them work to get some better shots and maybe not settle quite as much.
The two things that stood out to me is I thought Tristan Thompson and Aaron Baines was a pretty interesting battle, and I thought Tristan did a good job of asserting his dominance, and I think that'll be a little interesting small matchup to watch come the playoffs. I think there's still some mojo issues with Thompson on that second unit, but I think he's played better, and I think we're starting to move past the point of him not being the kind of pass of the Channing Frye has to necessarily play Thompson's minutes thing. I think Tristan's earning his minutes, frankly. And I think for Korver, you know, he missed his first shot and he missed a couple ones inside that you kind of would hope he would make. But I think he's struggled of late. He's just kind of fell in a little bit of a funk. And I thought him making 5-8 threes, it should be a good sign for him going forward. I think if you get him going, that should help some of your bench units. And, you know, they get some time off, which I think is the biggest thing here is, I don't know what their exact travel plans are. I don't know if they're going to Florida. I don't know if they have another wine trip somewhere, whether that like somewhere on the East Coast, because I assume they're not going to fly across country just for that. But this team had that long road trip. They went to Boston right after playing a game at home, and a pretty tough game, mind you, a physical game against the Blazers. They deserve a couple days off. Their bodies probably need a couple days off. Isaiah, get some time to work, and then he'll probably assumedly plan Saturday against Orlando. But I think getting Thursday, Friday, and most of Saturday until you play later at night. I think that that's a very good thing for this team as they head into a pretty brutal January schedule. And this is one of the rougher months on the schedule, if not the roughest for this Cavs team, based on them playing the Thunder, the Warriors, a bunch of other really good teams. And they lead into the next month playing the Houston Rockets to basically start the month of February. So this is a really tough month, and I think these next couple of days are a good thing for this group.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's also important to note that we probably shouldn't overanalyze too much this month. Like, you know, if we lost to Boston, if we lose to Golden State, and we lose to Houston and Oklahoma City, and like all these good teams, like, I think that's okay. As long as there's like good takeaways from that, because we have to be patient. We're just getting Isaiah Thomas back. He's played one game. He's going to play against Orlando on Saturday, so we're going to get to see a little bit more of him there. You know, you're still incorporating Tristan Thompson back. Like you said, he's finally starting to show more of what we've seen from him in the past, and it probably helped his case that Channing Frye couldn't hit the broadside of a barn tonight when he came in. So just so many new pieces, and it's going to be – you know, years ago, we probably would all freaked out if they would have lost, you know, like 3 in a row, 4 in a row in January, 5 of 6, anything like that. I think we just all need to be patient and just relax and know that, look, it's 0 degrees outside, and this is a team that's going to be playing in June, most likely. So whatever happens, let's just relax and kind of, you know, enjoy the process of Isaiah Thomas coming back and go from there.
Next couple of games for the Cavs. The Saturday, as Greg mentioned, against the Magic, the Wolves, then on Monday, the Raptors in Toronto next Thursday, the Pacers, then again in Indiana that Friday, then the Warriors on the 15th, the Magic again at home on the 18th, the Thunder at home on the 20th, the Spurs on the road on the 23rd, the Pacers at home on the 26th, and then the two games against the Pistons, one home, one away, and the 28th and the 30th before wrapping up at home on the 31st with the Heat. So it's a pretty grueling month. Some space between games, which is good, but a lot of very good teams in there. A lot of Central Division opponents as well. Looking at this game, Greg, I think Boston, the last thing we can talk about here is the first game of the season. I think we all throw that out in terms of what it actually means in evaluating how these two teams, the Kyrie Celtics, the post-Kyrie Cavs matchup. I think we all throw out opening night because of what happened to Gordon Hayward. First night for two very new teams, no Isaiah Thomas, all the factors. Throw that out. I think there are things about this game that make me more interested. Like I think Jason Tatum's good. I think he's legitimately good. I don't think this team had the Celtics have someone to defend LeBron, but I think Tatum and how he's played kind of gives the Cavs something to think about in terms of a creator. I think Baines was solid for them. I think, you know, I really, really like Terry Rozier. I think he's really, really good for them off the bench. He gives them something the Cavs are going to have to kind of deal with. Celtics are certainly a little younger, a little more spry, and that defense, currently the best in the NBA in terms of defensive rating, just ahead of the Warriors, is good. I think there are things the Cavs have to think about. I would certainly pick the Cavs, but I think Boston's pretty good. And I don't necessarily think this game is an indicator of how a series would go by any stretch of the imagination, just based on everything we've talked about. But I do think this game tells you Jason Tatum is going to be something the Cavs have to think about. And this defense does have some things the Cavs are going to have to kind of figure out in a 7-game series, even if they do end up being favored to win in 5 or 6.
I think the most important part that you just said was the Celtics don't have anybody that can guard LeBron. And, you know, few teams do, obviously. It's not like,
I mean, there's basically Kawhi, like Draymond,
Andre Iguodala.
Yeah. And KD can do it for stretches, and like maybe Giannis, and there's like a hand, like there's just like this like select group of people that have the freakish natural gifts enough to do it. And like Jaylen Brown could get there, but he's not there now. And Marcus Morris can't do it. And I don't know what, and Marcus Smart certainly can't do it. So that's just kind of what Boston has as a reality of defending LeBron.
Yeah. And they'll throw multiple bodies at him, you know, like every team basically does in the playoffs. But the main thing with Boston is I kind of thought the opening night, you know, watching, being there and watching Gordon Hayward go down and thinking, you know, how this team was going to change. You kind of thought, okay, is Kyrie all of a sudden going to be scoring 30 points a game? Is he going to, you know, I mean, for goodness sake, he put up 25 points a game alongside LeBron and Kevin Love last year. So you thought, okay, on this team, looking up and down the roster, you've got Jaylen Brown in his second year. You got Jason Tatum in his first year. You know, you got Al Horford, who's not a 20-point per game scorer. You know, Kyrie might have to score 30 points a game on this. And that hasn't been the case. It's, you know, like tonight, he had 11 points. He wasn't even the top scorer on the team. And he wasn't the top scorer in the starting unit. And I think that's one thing that worries me. Because before, you could say, okay, you could take the same defensive strategy they used last year, where they focused on the opponent's best player. Typically, they had J.R. Smith guard him. And they said, okay, we're going to throw an extra body at him every time. It worked for the most part with Paul George in the first round. He put up good stats, but he did it in a lot of minutes and a lot of usage. It worked in the second round when they played the Raptors, and they did it against DeMar DeRozan. It worked in the third round against Isaiah Thomas before he got hurt. They had a proven defensive strategy. Now, that defensive strategy doesn't work when you have, you know, four or five guys and you're spreading the ball around, and this guy can hurt you, and this guy can hurt you, and Jaylen Brown can drive on you, and Jason Tatum's such a good three-point shooter now. And, you know, it's they're not just Kyrie offensively, which is what I thought they were going to turn into after Gordon Hayward went down. And that aspect of it bothers me a little bit. But I think when you look at, yeah, as good as Tatum is, I believe he's still 19. And is he really going to be a huge disruptive force in the playoffs? Especially when he's kind of, you know, probably trying to fight through that rookie wall. We've seen Al Horford just crumble against us in the playoffs previously as a member of the Hawks and the Celtics, especially on the glass. The Celtics are good. They're really good. I would be shocked if it's not a Cavs-Celtics Eastern Conference Finals. But at the end of the day, is this a team that I believe can beat Cleveland 4 out of 7? No. I don't give them a chance to do that. I think they'll win a game. I think they might win two games. I still don't think, given their age, given the fact that they're missing Hayward, given the fact, like you said, they don't have anybody that can guard LeBron, I still take the Cavs 10 out of 10 times against them in a potential series, especially when you consider that there would be no back-to-backs.
Yeah, I think you look at – I think Toronto's good, and I think that, you know, the DeMar and Kyle have to not be bad in the playoffs for every other game to kind of make them a threat to kind of get there again. And we know how that series plays out. And the Celtics with Hayward, I think, would be even more interesting just because of how good Gordon is. He's their best player, in my mind, if he's healthy, right? Like, I think just he's so good and fits this NBA so well and fits Stevens' offense so well. And we'll see what happens. The Cavs are currently third in the East, ahead of Washington and behind Toronto. And Boston's at number one by, I think it's 4.5 or 5.5, depending. I don't know if this is what I'm looking at. It's been updated or not ahead of this game. I think it's 4.5 now. But it's going to be interesting. I would be shocked as well. And there's a lot of little matchups in that series that really intrigue me. I think Wade and Marcus Smart in terms of what they're doing off the bench is interesting. I think Baines and Thompson is kind of interesting, and I want to see how the Cavs handle, you know, and you know, how does Boston sort out its wing rotation? How does, you know, do they give more minutes to Tatum ahead of a Rozier or a Smart? You know, is Brown tracking LeBron to kind of give, for whatever reason, just kind of have someone on there that can chase him for a series? And how does the rotation get trimmed? And for the Cavs, you know, where do they end up settling into? And that's the big thing, is who does Isaiah best play with? You know, what is Thompson still playing all those minutes? You know, is Love getting his minutes extended? Probably. What does this team look like? Are Shumpert and Derrick Rose in the rotation come the playoff time? And we don't know these things, but it's going to be interesting to see. I very much don't think we learn much from this game. I just don't think there's anything you can really take away from it. But I just Boston's overall body of work has me very intrigued about what they could be against the Cavs in the playoffs, just because it's something mostly because it's something different. And because they're kind of a different breed of team the Cavs have faced, just because they're really good at defense, and the Cavs haven't necessarily faced a team kind of built like this in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'd say over the last couple of years, it's definitely shaping up to be the best team that they've faced in the East playoffs. But at the end of the day, I just don't think they have the star power. I don't think they have the experience. I don't think they have – I mean – we've seen time and time again, LeBron in the playoffs is just a different animal. He is. And the Celtics, they had nobody to guard him last year. I don't think they have anybody to guard him this year. And as good as some of these other teams are going to be, Toronto, Washington, you know, anytime Milwaukee could make a big jump forward, I just don't think if we were in the West, it might be different. But in the East, the Cavs are just still far and away the best team. And there's a lot to be figured out between now and April, and that's good. And, you know, one would assume we'd only get better with Isaiah back in there. You've got the trade deadline coming up next month. I don't think anybody believes that they're going to sit back and do nothing. You've got buyout season. You've got so many things that are going to change between now and April too, that, you know, it's going to be fun. And especially with the competition that they're going to face this month, it's going to be a good challenge for them. But at the end of the day, it still all comes down to Golden State. And, you know, you look at this game and you try to make takeaways and you give credit to Boston. They had a nice win. But at the end, it's still going to come down to Golden State, and that's still who the Cavaliers should be focusing on.
Yeah, it's a long season. It's January 3rd. It's just 2018. We're still 6 months away from the finals. Keep that in mind. Keep in mind that the Cavs, again, did just come off that road trip, did just play last night in a pretty physical game against the Blazers, or played Tuesday night, assuming you listen to this on Thursday morning or Thursday afternoon or something. And that's just kind of the reality, is that these kind of losses happen. I don't think there's a lot to really read into it. I think, again, look, everything we talked about on the show, I think Boston has aspects that are interesting. We'll see how it looks in April and May, and that's going to be something to watch, and we're a ways away from that. I wish it was tomorrow, because it's the best part of the year for basketball, but we'll see what happens when we get there. And between now and then, Greg Schwartz will surely be back on this podcast. You can find him on Twitter at CavsGregBR and find his writing at BleacherReport. Greg, thank you so much for coming on Locked On Cavs.
Thank you.
We'll be back tomorrow. Special episode with a special guest doing something a little different. And then 11 a.m. Saturday, recording that Facebook live chat on Fear the Sword to Facebook. If you want to come in and answer questions, we'll talk to you then. Use the promo code ELLACAST for my bookie, and have a great Thursday.